Today's daf is Nun Aleph. We're going to start at the bottom of Nun Amud Bet, Gufa. Okay, Gufa always means we're going to go in depth into something mentioned previously. Amar Rav. Rav has halacha, Eim machzikim b'nichsei eshet ish. Remember, that was our whole thing we ended with yesterday. Oh, I wanted to go back. I had ended yesterday with Rav Yosef, who said there was a whole debate about the statement of Rav when he says, eshet ish tzricha limchot. Right, this was the other statement of Rav. Yesterday we saw eshet ish tzricha limchot, and there was a whole debate, is she mocheh? Are we obviously talking about only her husband selling her the property? And that raised an issue to the statement that ein li ish chazaka b'nechse ishto. And then Rav Yosef said, no, actually, because we said it can't be that she has to be mocheh to some stranger who comes into her property, because that's the husband's responsibility to kick him off. So then Rav Yosef answered that no, it could be talking about an acher, and he gives this strange case where the person started eating the produce of the land while the husband was still alive. Then the husband died, and then the wife wasn't mocheh for 3 years. And at that point, he can create a chazaka, and that's where we said, that she has to be mocheh in a case like that. So I asked at the end, I wasn't 100% sure, although I kind of thought now I'm clear about it, why it had to be this case where it started off b'chayei haba when he was still alive and then it continued after. So what you'd have to really do is reread this eshet ish tzricha limchot. It doesn't really mean eshet ish tzricha limchot, because when she's supposed to protest, she's no longer an eshet ish. Her husband's dead, right? But it had to be a case where she was an eshet ish in the beginning. So what they're saying is there is a case where a woman who's an eshet ish down the road, when she's no longer an eshet ish, would have to protest. And that's how he's understanding the statement. So she was an eshet ish when the person started claiming rights to the land. At that point, she didn't need to protest. But when her husband died, and then she had no longer had the husband to rely on to complain, then already it was her responsibility to complain. But again, at that point, there's a bit of a problem with the pshat here, because at that point, she was no longer an eshet ish. But what they're saying is there is a case where a woman could be an eshet ish when someone starts claiming rights to the land. And then if 3 years pass when she's no longer, when her husband's no longer around, at that point, she's responsible to protest. And if she doesn't, then he could say, I bought it from your husband who claims he bought it from you.
Is there any question of resetting the clock?
What do you mean?
Of the 3 years, that she has 3 years after he dies?
Well, she clearly has 3 years after he dies.
Even if he's protested, like in year one, so then of the 3 years, the other person would have.
So then you're saying extend it?
If the husband protested in year one.
And then he dies.
Does
she have 3 years to protest?
She anyway for sure needs to have 3 years to protest. 3 years, minimum 3 years to protest. In other words, she can if she doesn't protest after 2 years, it doesn't mean anything. She has the full 3 years because it's only between her and him now, and it's counted is the time. That's why specifically the case was 3 years, because that's the whole point, because then he could create a chazaka just with her and say, you sold me the land, but instead he claims your husband bought the land off you and sold it to me, and therefore That's why he's believed, because if it was just 3 years with her and had nothing to do with the husband, right, it was all after the death, then he'd be believed. So therefore he's believed to say even if he started earlier, okay? Now, if the husband had protested, then you have that question that we raised earlier, which is once you protest once, then the person's already considered a gazlan, and then they're not believed, and then they have no claim, really. So that could be a separate thing, that maybe she wouldn't even need to protest if the husband had already protested. But this is a case where obviously the husband didn't protest within the first year, or however long it might have been. Okay, so Guf, Amarav. Ein machzikim b'nechsei eshet ish. So he says now, no one can create a chazaka on the property of a married woman. V'dayanei gola omrim machzikim. Okay, and the Dayanei Gola say, no, you can create a chazaka. Okay, so first of all, Rashbam says, who are the Dayanei Gola? They say Shmuel. Okay, remember, Rav was more important than Shmuel. And Karna, okay, was another person. And so they were, remember, this is talking about first generation Amoraim. Okay. And it's interesting because Rav was also in the Gola. So interesting that they're called the Dayanei Gola and he's not. Okay, just one second. Right, okay, so now So ein machzikim nichsei shadish, that's because she's not expected to complain. And Dayanei Gola say, no, you can't be machzikim. So I'm a Rav. Halacha ke Dayanei Gola. Now this is something very strange. After Rav himself said, okay, don't get too wowed though yet. But once Rav said, you can be machzikim, and then the Dayanei Gola, I'm sorry, you can't be machzik. And then the Dayanei Gola said machzikim. And then Rav himself, who was really greater in stature than Shmuel and Karna, say the halachas like them. So Amrule, Rav Kahana, Rav Asi, Rav. So they go to Rav and they say, Hadrabe Mar Mishmate, did you change your mind? They're flabbergasted, just like Naomi, what do you mean? Whoa. Amar Lehu, Mistabra Amarai, Kid to Rav Yosef. He says, I wasn't saying that I agree with them. I was saying that there could be a case where what they're saying is true. And that is in the case of the Rav Yosef brought up, where a woman who basically, right, again, she was an Eish Hadish, but then she's no longer an Eish Hadish, then she's expected to protest, and then he can create a chazaka. But if it's not a case like that, then Rav doesn't agree with the Dayanei Gola. Now, the Dayanei Gola, though, think that it's across the board, that people can create a chazaka, and if the woman doesn't protest, then they can create a chazaka. Okay, but Rav doesn't think that that's the case, even though it sounded like it for a minute there, but he's a no. He just thinks that there could be a situation where the Dayanei Gola could be right.
Well, it's not the first time that, or it's not the last time that Dayanei Gola differ with the Dayanei Eretz Yisrael.
Right. What's interesting, though, is that he's not exactly Dayanei Eretz Yisrael. I mean, he's sort of he lived in Israel, but then he moved to Bavel, right, and establishes his Beit Midrash there. So that's why it's also interesting that they're called Dayanei Gola and he's not. Because you would think also, right, he's the main one who went to Bavel and set up his yeshiva, right? We've seen this Ki Ata Rav Le Bavel, when Rav came to Bavel, and that was the beginning of the strength of the Gola. But I guess it's true, he's still considered somewhat Eretz Israeli. The Lo Isha B'Nechse Ba'ala. Now we're continuing along in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah said an Isha can't create a chazaka on the property of her husband, right? If she's eating produce for 3 years and the husband doesn't complain, she can't just say, oh, well, this is my land. So the Gemara says, Pshita, right? So why is it so Pashut? Kevan di la mizone, mizone hu de ka'achla, right? The assumption is, since she has rights to get mizono from the husband, so she's been eating mizono from the, she's been taking for the produce for 3 years, so that doesn't give her rights to say it's mine. It's because she's eating mizono. So that's totally obvious. Why does the Mishnah need to say anything? So the Gemara answer is, Lutzricha diichela ara achrite lemizona. It must be talking about a case where he designated other property for her to be eating her mizono from, and then she was taking produce from a different property of his. And then you might have thought, well, since it's clear that she wasn't taking it for her mizono, because it was a field designated for her mizono, and she was eating from a different field, then maybe she'd be able to have rights to it. And the answer is, the Mishnah's telling you, even in that case, she cannot create a chazaka. So now, what did we do last time? We saw that the man can't create a chazaka in Nechse Ishto. We said, well, he can't create a chazaka, but if he has proof and a star, then shouldn't it work? And that's where we got started. Well, maybe you could claim that she was just doing it nachat ruacho salabala to create shalom bayit with her husband and not complain and said, yeah, sure, I'll write you that this land is yours. So now we're going to say the same thing here, except a different taina. Okay, we're going to say, well, again, if it says she can't create a chazaka from eating off the husband's property, haraya yesh. It seems to be that what? If she had a proof, she had a star that showed that she bought her husband's property, that should work, correct? Right? If it says, again, these are all these assumptions we're making, but if the woman can't create a chazaka, but it could mean that if she has proof, then she can prove that she bought the property. Now they're going to bring in a different possible ta'ana, okay? It's like the flip of Nacha Ruach Osalabala. Lema, okay, I'll preface this with, both in Nachat Ruach Osalabala, I mean, we didn't discuss it enough then, but today maybe we'll discuss it more, which is a view of at least a concern for, okay, I won't say that this is indicative of all relationships in the time of the Talmud, okay? Because again, we saw when we learned Sota and some other cases that the system has to protect, or when we learn ketubot, right, that he could claim, you know, oh, she was already not a virgin when I married her, and all sorts of, you know, people claiming other things against their spouses, that relationships between spouses weren't always so simple, which may kind of, nowadays it's also not so simple always. Again, I'm not going to say this is the general rule, but the halacha is saying we see that there's relationships where these kind of things might happen, and we have to create a system that will protect from this. So, what are they saying now? So again, they're going to say, right, so yesterday was, she's scared of her husband, basically. Okay, just like the thugs we saw, they were scared of the thugs, and they would say, oh yeah, the land's yours, because they were scared they were going to beat them up. Here, the wife is scared of the husband. You know, maybe it's, if you want to look on the bright side, it's saying, I want to just keep very nice, peaceful relations. On the negative side, you could say, well, maybe she was worried about getting abused or something, that if she didn't do it, then he would, you know, maybe abuse her. So here we have another case, which is Haraya Yesh. Okay, so we're going to assume if she had a proof, if she had a proof she bought the land, that should work. And why should that work? The Gemara is going to question. Lema ligaluye zuza hu debai. Maybe he's trying to find money that she has hidden. Okay, now what is this hidden money? Okay, I'll give you a few different options about what this is. Is what does he say? He says to her, I'll sell you this land. Why? Because she has money in her hands that he has rights to. And he believes that she's hiding the money. So what does he say? He says, I'll sell you my property. She'll take out the money and give it to him. He feels like he's the rightful owner. I'll tell you why in a minute, what kind of money we're talking about. She's concerned that the woman is basically stealing from him and taking money of his, or money that, okay, we'll see, maybe it's not necessarily 100% his, but it's money that's hers, but that belongs to the husband. Okay, why? I'll give you a few different options, and then we'll continue to discuss it. The Rosh Bam and the Reish Vavos suggests that maybe she stole money from him and hid it, and that's really what they're worried about. He's worried that she's been, right, the woman's living in the house of the man, it's very easy to steal his money. She's been putting away money for herself. You have to remember also, a woman didn't have money at all in those times. Right? All her money, remember, most of her money, even if she leaves the marriage with it, when she brings it into the marriage, the husband gets all the produce of it, right? Anything that comes out of it. So he basically uses her money and then gives her back at the end, right? He has to commit that at the end he'll give her back the money, whether it's Nechsei Melug, Nechsei Tzomparzal, depending on, right, with the loss, with the gain, etc. But basically, she doesn't really have her own money, so maybe she was stealing money from him, okay? It's possible. The Ramban suggests that maybe she found money and hid it from him. Now, if you remember, we learned that mitziat ishto goes to the husband. And what else goes to the husband? Her salary. So if she works, goes to the husband. So what did she do? She hid some of it away to keep for herself. The Ritva also suggests a third possibility, which it could be just her nichsei melug she's hiding. Because what's with the nichsei melug? Again, they're hers. However, he gets the produce from it, so he wants to use it while they're married. So either which way, whatever kind of a case it is, this is money that he has either full rights to or at least partial rights to. Which means, you have to remember, again, saying it like this, that he has rights to all her money, but in return, she gets, if you remember, she gets food, she gets,
Clothing,
shelter, right? He has to take care of all of her basic needs, and he has to agree he'll do pidyon shvuyim for her, if you remember. There were all these things that were connected, other things, right? She gets certain protective, right? He's in charge of her.
The first one is just interesting. The others, yeah. The others I understand.
Okay, but the fact that she would steal money from him.
Well, that's part of it. And the other is, you know, if you have a business, right, you're responsible for your accounting to know what's coming in. And it sounds like they're absolving, maybe I'm being unfair, but yeah, they're absolving him of being responsible of knowing what he has.
Where all his money is. Uh-huh, interesting. Right, could be. So what they're saying here is what? That you might think that he could claim, I didn't really sell you this land, because what did I really do? I told you I would sell you this land just so that you would give me the money that was mine. Which means what? That what really happened here? If the money that she paid for the field is really his money, then she didn't actually pay for the field and she doesn't own the field, because she just gave him money that was his. Okay, so therefore, there's no transaction. So they say, how could she bring a proof? Because can't he claim, right? Can't he say, oh, this wasn't a real sale. This was just my way of getting money from my wife that she was hiding from me that was really my money all along. Okay, or in the Nichsei Malud case, wasn't exactly my money, but I have rights to use the money, right? And obviously, when it's the Nichsei Malud and he has rights to it, she can't use that to buy something else. So basically, the money that transpired, the transaction that transpired, was an irrelevant transaction because no money was really given to him. Okay, so now they say, so therefore, how could she prove that this is my land? So now what do they say? Shmat mina, since they say haraya yesh, and it does work, so what do we learn from here? That hamocher sadeh li'ishto kanta v'lo amrina l'giluye zuza hu debai. Okay, so now they're saying, it sounds like from our Mishnah, and from what we can infer from our Mishnah, that she could prove, if she had a shtar, that a shtar would be enough to prove, and that we're not worried about this ta'ana, that he's just trying to find her hidden money. So now they say, wait, So now they say, lo. Ema. Okay, so they don't want to really say that he can't make a claim, Ligluye Zuze Hudabai. So therefore, they want to say he can actually claim, I was trying to get the hidden money that my wife was hiding from me. And therefore, how do you explain this Haraya Yesh? Bishtar Matana. When they say Haraya Yesh, what do they mean? That only works, okay, remember, what did we say? A woman can't create a chazaka b'nichsei ba'ala, right? Ein la chazaka, okay? Infer from here, shtar, she had a shtar. It would work, okay? It would prove that she owned the land. What kind of shtar are we talking about? We're not talking about a shtar mecher, because in a shtar mecher, we're worried that he was trying to get money that she had either stolen or was trying to avoid giving him money that was really his. So this is talking about a shtar matana. In other words, the only case she can prove that she bought her husband or that she owns her husband's land that was her husband's is if she has a shtar matana. If she says, oh, he gave this to me as a gift, then that would work. Okay? Because a mecher wouldn't work because he'd be able to claim, I was just trying to get my own money back. Okay, so ema hashtaraya b'shtar matana. Amale Rav Nachman le Rav Huna. Now we're going to deal for a while with the statement of Rav Nachman. Lo hava mar gabam beorta bitchuma damrinan milem al yata. You weren't with us yesterday in the tomb of the city when we said these amazing things in the Beit Midrash. What were these amazing things we said in the Beit Midrash? So Amale, obviously, right? This is his intro to get Rav Huna curious about what happened. So obviously Rav Huna is curious. Amar lei, my mile malyata, amaritu. What great things were said. So he says to him, Hamocher sadeli ishto kanta velo amrinan ligiluye zuza hu debai. Against what we just said, okay? He says it was said in the Beit Midrash, this big chidush, against what we would have thought, that even if she has a shtar mecher, she can claim rights to that land, and he can't claim, I was just trying to get my money back. Okay? Which, again, if he says, I was just trying to get my money back, then what would we say? She has a shtar that shows he sold her the land. She gave money, but the money was really his money he was trying to get out of the wife, and it was a fake sale. And it was just a way to get his money back, and that's why it wouldn't work. And comes Rav Nachman, and he says, no, it does work, and we don't allow him to claim a claim like that. So interestingly enough, instead of arguing against him and saying, no, that's not true, okay, what does Rav Huna say? Amar le, pshita. Obviously what you're saying is true. In other words, why are you saying, right, this is interesting. He tries to pull one over on him. Hey, you missed it yesterday. We were talking about this amazing thing. And he says, what's so amazing about that? I knew that all along. It's so obvious, even though we just said it wasn't so obvious, right? Now, why does he say it's so obvious? Because what does he say? Very obviously, if we have, what happened here? There was a shtar, mecher, right? Okay, because that's the raya that we have, the proof. And there was kesef that changed hands, right? She gave money to the husband. Now, what does he say? Dal zuze mehacha. I understand the kesef doesn't necessarily work here because the kesef we could claim is really money that she had in her possession that was his, that she was hiding from him, and he just wanted to get his own money back. So really no money was transferred here. That's fine. However, what's still there though? Okay, I put it on the board, right? There's still a shtar. V'tikni b'shtara. But just the fact that she has a shtar that said this land belongs to her, Milotznan, did we not learn in a Mishnah? Nechasim sheyesh lam achrayut, which means property, niknim bekesef b'shtar u'b'chazaka. There's three ways you can acquire land. Money, shtar, and chazaka, right? The chazaka we've been discussing for a long time now. And the shtar should be enough of a proof. So I don't care that the money was insignificant, right? Because it was really his own money. However, he wrote her a shtar that says you own the property. That should be a kinyan in and of itself. In which case, the halacha is obvious that he can't, if she has a shtar, obviously she can prove rights to the land because we've purchased land based on a shtar. That's enough of a purchase. So now, Rav Nachman, basically what he's questioning Rav Nachman is not about the psak, but about the chiddush of the psak. He's saying it's not just a chiddush because it's totally obvious. It says in the Mishnah the land is purchased by shtar, in which case, obviously, if a woman shows a shtar, she bought the land from her husband, obviously the land belongs to her, and whether or not the money was her money or not doesn't really make a difference. So now Rav Nachman has to support why he thinks actually it was a chiddush, and really, without the big chiddush here, we wouldn't have thought this. Amar lei v'lav it marala, wasn't it said about that Mishnah that nechasim sheyesh lamachrayut niknim bekesef b'shtar b'chazaka? Amar Shmuel lo shanu ela b'shtar matana, aval b'shtar mecher lo kana ad sheyiten lo dameha. Shmuel says that you can purchase a lamb with a shtar only in a case where it was a gift, but not in a case where it was a sale. Because so if I produce a shtar and no money was transferred, but I say it was a gift, so that shtar is enough to say the land was mine. I have a kinyan on that land. But if someone sold me the property for money, then and I just produce a shtar and I say, yeah, but I haven't yet paid, that property is not mine. And this is obvious why it is. Because what does it mean to do a kinyan? A kinyan is I give of my property to you, I'm fully willing to give it to you. I'm saying it's yours. So if I write you a shtar for my land, we have a contract, I'm going to sell you my house, and I write a contract and we sign the contract, that doesn't mean the house is yours. Obviously, you have to pay me money. If you haven't paid me money, I'm not an idiot. I certainly wouldn't give you my property, right? When we're talking about something so big as property, when we're talking about objects, right? Remember, kesef isn't kona at all. Because objects are different, but when we're talking about a house, to such an important piece of property or land, which is a lot of money, the person is not in a mecher going to be willing to be machne his land, to give rights to his land to the other person without money. So therefore, we're going to say, comes Rav Nachman and he says, hey, Rav Huni, you said as long as I have a shtar, that's enough. He says, no. You need shtar and kesef. Okay, when it comes to a mecher, okay, when it comes to a matana, that Mishnah was talking about a matana. That's what Shmuel said. The Mishnah, when it said you can buy the shtar, that was a matana. Matana can be acquired with shtar alone. But how can you acquire in a sale? Only with shtar and kesef. Okay, it's not enough to do it with just a shtar. And therefore, it is a big chiddush here that we're not choshesh. She was just trying to get her money, right? Because the money is a critical element in the kinyan. So comes Rav Huna and he retorts back. V'lav motiv Rav Hamnuna? Didn't Rav Hamnuna question Shmuel and say, Bishtar Ketzad? How would it work Bishtar? He says, what Rav Hamnuna says is, I'm going to quote a brayta that disproves Shmuel. What did Shmuel say? That the shtar only works for matana, but you need shtar and kesef when it comes to a mecher. But here Rav Hamnuna quotes a brayta that says what? Bishtar ketzad, how does one acquire land using a shtar? Katavlo alaniyar o alacheres, af al pisha embo shavapruta, right? Even if the cheres or the niyar that he wrote the document on isn't worth anything. And what does he write? Sadi michura lecha, sadi knuya lecha. Okay, actually it should be sadi, look at the bach. Nituna lecha. In other words, what do you have here? Lashon of a mecher, sadi mechura lecha, or sadi nituna lecha, lashon of a matana. Either which way, hareze mechura u nituna. So what do you see? According to this braita, you can create a chazaka, kinyan bishtar with just in a matana or a mecher. because it says Sadim Achura Alecha. So Rav Hamnuna questioned Shmuel. So don't bring Shmuel is approved because Rav Hamnuna knocked him down with this braita that shows that Mechura Alecha could be affected just with a shtar alone. What?
But you have to specify those words that it's, I'll give it to you even though.
Well, right, if he says, my field is sold to you, right? And but I would assume that that was the typical Lashon you would write in the Shtar. What else are you going to write in the Shtar? Right? In a Shtar, you're going to have the Lashon of, I'm giving you this land. Right? Just like in a Kiddushin, you say, Harat Mekudeshet Li, right? And if you had a Shtar, you'd write, Harat Mekudeshet Li B'Shtar Zo. You'd have to have words of a Kinyan in the Shtar.
No, but it says Kitas Kitaglo Avarpish En Lo Shavaputa. Like, do you have to put that on the Cheres and on the Shtar?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Oh.
What he's saying is, okay, let's say I give you a document that's signed that says, right, this, and you take the document. So at that point, you've acquired my land, even though I haven't transferred you any money. Now, what could you say? Well, maybe the Shtar is worth money.
Mm.
But they're saying, even if the Shtar isn't worth any, a pruta even. Right? You've acquired it not with money. You've acquired it with the shtar alone. Okay. So now they say, wait a minute. So Rav Nachman says back to him, but you don't remember the whole mahalach. It's true that Rav Hamnuna questioned Shmuel, but Shmuel had an answer. What was his answer? V'lav hu motiv la v'hu mefarik la. Sorry, actually, Rav Hamnuna himself answered it. Okay. Isn't it true, though, that he brought this question, but he answered it himself? And what did he say? B'mocher sadehu mipnei ra'ata. That would only work if he sold a field because it was bad. When someone has a bad field, what happens? They want to sell it very quickly because they're worried that the person will find out all the faults and they'll decide they don't want to sell it. In that case, I'd be willing to sell my property with a shtar loan without actually getting the money. So now, what do we see? We're going to have three categories. According to the answer now, and this is Rav Nachman's answer why he says it is a big chiddush, because shtar alone wouldn't be enough. Because in a regular sale, you need a shtar and you need money. If it's a gift, or if it's a sale of property that you want to get rid of very, very quickly, those two cases, shtar alone will work. Okay? And that's how he resolves the braita with Shmuel. Because when Shmuel, when the braita said, Sadim b'chura alecha, it only meant a case of a mecher of property that you wanted to get rid of quickly. Okay, now we have I never know how to pronounce his name, Bivai or Vivi or something like that. Mesayim by Mishmeid Rav Nachman, or some people say that you don't actually read that at all, and it's really just Rav Ashi Amar. Bimatana, okay, here's a second answer for this braita against Shmuel. Rav Ashi Amar, Bimatana Bikesh Litnalo. Even the braita said Sadim Achura Lecha, it didn't really mean Sadim Achura Lecha, we've seen this before. It really meant he was giving it to her as a gift, which would then say that in a mecher you would need money and kesef. V'lama kachuv lo b'lashon mecher, kedei liapot kocho. It was really just to give, it actually should be kocha. No, it was to basically say that I want this to be so much your property, it's as if you bought it for me with money. Okay? So that was the second answer to that question. Meitive. Now we're going to have another question going back to Rav Nachman. Okay? So Rav Nachman said again that what? Mocher sadehu liishto kanta. Okay? So now we're going to have a question on this. Loved mina eved. Here's another Tanaitic source. If you borrow money from your slave, vishichruro, and then you free him, or mina isha, or from your wife, vigirsha. Okay, now remember, what's unique about, we're talking about an Eved Kanani and a wife. What's the unique about them both? All their Maasei Adayim, everything they work for, belongs to the husband. Okay? So now, what happens? Then he divorces her, or he frees the slave. Ein lahem alav klum. They can't reclaim the loan. They can't say, you owe me money. Okay? Now, why must this be? Because, my taima, lav mishum damrina legluye zuzuhu debai. Is it not because he can claim, I didn't really borrow money from them. I pretended that I was borrowing money from them, but what was I really trying to do? I was trying to just get my money back that they had either stolen from me, because they live in his house and maybe they stole money from him, or that they have been taking from their Maasei Adayim, they have been taking parts for themselves, keeping it and hiding it, and not giving it to me. So that's why it seems to be he can claim that I don't owe them anything. So what do they answer? So now what are we comparing? Notice we're comparing a halva'a to a mecher. So now they're going to say, right, and therefore, why wouldn't the same thing apply in a mecher if she brings out a shtar a mecher? Okay. By the way, the Rashbam says that lavamina eved v'katav shtar milvev she'abed lo nechasav. It's specifically in a case where he wrote him a shtar, where the cases are very comparable, where there's actually a document that documents it, which means if you have a shtar, right, then your nechasim are lean to the loan. And still, we say, even though we wrote them a shtar, it doesn't mean anything. It has no value, the shtar, and they don't have to pay him back anything because we can assume that he was just trying to get his money from them. And what do we say now? It could be also, they're going to answer, which is what? Shanei hatam dilonicha leila shavuye nafshe eved lova liish malve. We've seen this before, we're going to see it again, this eved lova liish malve. It's a pasuk from Mishlei which says that a person who borrows money is basically subjugated to his creditor, okay, to the person who lent him the money. And it means that it's not a pleasant, nobody wants to be in that relationship if they can avoid it, right? Nobody would ever want to be a master, have to be, right, have some master above him if he could avoid it. So therefore, we're going to assume that since there was a halva'a here, in that case, we're going to say if we have some other way of understanding the situation, it must be that's the case, because why would anyone want to subjugate himself to another person? And I think, without saying it, but I think they're trying to get at also, particularly what man wants to be subjugated to his wife and what man wants to be subjugated to his Eved Kenani, right? They're, in the hierarchy of their society, right, it was the opposite. So it was hard to imagine that a person would actually do that, and therefore, in that case, they'll assume that it must be he was trying to get his own money back. Whereas in the flip case, right, not the flip case, but the other case of a mecher, that wouldn't be true because there's no concept of you're subjugated to the person you sold property to. It doesn't exist. So there's nothing wrong with him, in theory, selling the property to them. That's a possibility. But this is such a far-off possibility that it's unlikely that that's the case. Shalach Rav Huna Bar Avin. So now Rav Huna Bar Avin sends to the Talmidei Beit Midrash. What does he say? That's what the Rashbam says. He sends to the Talmidei Beit Midrash. Basically, he wants to teach them this halacha, because usually shalach, I think he says it, because usually shalach is someone asked a question. Here, he's sending a psak. Okay, so now we're going to have two different psakim about this, and that's going to take us to the end of the daf, all discussion about this. Rav Huna Bar Avin says, Hamocher sadeh l'ishto kanta. If you sell a field to your wife, she can acquire it. Uba'al ochel perot. However, let's talk about nechsei malug. What are nechsei malug? They're things that maybe she brought in, but often it's things that she inherited while she was already married. Okay, so she gets a gift from someone while she's married. So what they're saying is, if he sells her property when they're married, he's obviously, that's going to have at least the status of any other property she would have gotten when she was married, which is, even though he's selling it to her, he's not selling it to her fully. He still is keeping rights to the payroll. Okay? That's Rav Huna Bar Avin. Okay? Rabbi Abba for Rabbi Avau, v'chol gdolei ador. Remember we had this one a few weeks ago? And all the great people of the generation, which again is trying to stress, right? It's obviously it wasn't Kogzol Ador because other people said otherwise. But they say, Amru, b'matana b'kesh litnola. Really, he wanted to give it to her as a gift. Okay? V'lama katav la l'shum mecher, k'dei liyapot et kocha. Okay? So if she has a shtar that he sold her the land, they view it as he clearly didn't sell her the land. He gave it to her as a gift. Now, if he gave it to her as a gift, what do we assume? When it comes to mecher, we had a whole debate. Does somebody, when he sells, does he give ba'ayin yafeh or ba'ayin ra'ah? Right? Does he keep that path to himself if he has the boor or the dut, or remember he has something in there? Will he keep a path for himself, or will he sell it ba'ayin yafeh and sell the whole thing? So when it comes to a mecher, so maybe we could debate it. Okay? But what do they say? They say if a husband sells property to his wife, he's clearly not selling it. He's clearly giving her a gift. Okay? He's not selling it. Now, if he's giving it to her as a gift, anyone who gives a gift does it ba'ayin yafa. The whole concept of a gift is ba'ayin yafa. So if he's giving her the land, then he's obviously giving her rights even to the payroll. Okay? So they view any shtar of a sale that a woman has that her husband sold her, he didn't sell her. He actually gave it to her as a gift. In which case, they're going to come to a different conclusion, which is that she owns the whole thing. If he really sold it to her, which we don't know, we're assuming he didn't sell it to her, according to them. But the first opinion is, no, she brings a shtar mecher, he must have sold it to her, and if he sold it to her, then he has rights to pay her. So we have two...
A lot of assumptions in that.
Yes, a lot of assumptions. Right. It's tricky because...
The whole relationship.
Right. That's why I said that it's very interesting to think about what the relationship between the husband and wife was. And again, I'm hesitant to say that all these things are indicative of every relationship of, and you can learn from here on the basic relationships of the husbands and wives in those days. I don't think that's necessarily true, because again, if you said that, then if when we learn ketubot, you'd assume that every marriage was full of suspicions, right? Each one suspecting the other that you were this and you were that, mishaneh. Yeah, Misha, right, what was it, Misha, right, whether she was raped, was it before the Erusin, was it after the Erusin, right, we're talking about extreme cases where people are trying to take advantage of other people. But based on that, right, in other words, it's not clear that everybody's out to get the other, or everybody's pulling one over the other, or what, but anyway, right here, actually, it's not even that they're trying to trick anybody, this is just a matter of, you know, you can also imagine the husband sells it, and then he comes to the court and says, but wait, don't I get the pay road? And she thinks, well, you sold it to me. Didn't you sell it to me so that I can have the pay road? And you can see this whole debate going on about who has rights to the pay road or not. So that's where this machloka comes in, where according to the first opinion, it was a sale. And as a sale, it's just like regular nechse meluk, and he has rights to pay road. And the second opinion is, no, it's unlikely he would sell it to her. He must have given it as a gift. He wanted people to know that this was really her land, maybe because she was a woman also, and it was unlikely people would, you know, think that really she owned something. So he said, I sold it to her, just so that she'd have more strength. Okay? And therefore, we really view it as a matana, in which case, we're going to say that she gets everything. Okay, now we're going back to the first opinion. And we're going to have the exact same question answer we had before. If we say that a Baal can sell to his wife, right, then what are we assuming? That he can't claim Ligluye Suzehu Dubai, right? He was just trying to find her hidden money. And we're gonna ask a question now. Metive Lavamina Eve Vishakuromana Ishava Gersha Ain Lahama Lav Klum. Here they bring a star, and we say the star is invalid. My time, Allah Bishum Damrina Daamre, Ligluye Suzehu Dubai, right? Isn't it because we say he's just trying to get their hidden money? So what are the answers? Same answer as before. Shane Hatam, Delola Shava Inish, Eved Lova Liishmalka. Right? A person wouldn't turn himself into, right? It's actually the Nusach according to the Bach is Loma Shava Inish Nafshe. He wouldn't turn himself into an Eved to his wife, and therefore that whole claim would only be true for the Halva'a, but not for a sale. Okay, Amar Rav. Now we're gonna see Rav and Rabbi Elazar match up to different sides of this machloket. So Amarav, Hamocher Sadeh Liishto Kanta, the Habal Ochel Perot. If he sells her a field with a shtar mecher, then he holds like the first opinion, Rav Huna Bar Avin, that the husband eats Perot, right? She gets the field, she acquired it, and the husband gets to eat Perot. So number one, we're not concerned that he was just trying to get her hidden money. And number two, we believe it was really a sale, and the Baal therefore gets to eat Perot because it's just like regular Nechse Meluk. Bimatana, if it was a gift, shtar matana, where it said, I'm giving you, right, sadin nituna lecha, nituna lach in this case, kanta, she acquires it, ve'ein habal ochel perot. Okay? If it was clearly a matana, then he wouldn't get the rights to the perot, she would get the everything. The Rabbi Elazar Amar, he holds like the second opinion, like Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Avau and all the Gdolei Hador, right? You already see it wasn't all the Gdolei Hador because Rav disagreed with them. Okay, so what does he say? By the way, this is interesting. It's very parallel to the earlier sugya because there was a lot of debate throughout the generations about it. And yet they said, and all the Gdolei Hador say this. It's the exact same thing here going on. Rabbi Elazar says, Echad ze v'yechad ze kanta, ve'ein ha-baal ochel perot. Okay, either which way she acquires it, but the Baal never eats perot, because again, what do we assume? It was a matana, and if it's a matana, then he doesn't get the perot. So now let's see what happens historically. Rabbi Elazar is who? Okay, let's just get the people. Rav, first generation Emoraim, Bavel. Rabbi Elazar is a student of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was like between first and second generation. He was a little younger than Rav. Okay. However, we're going to see that he has status as high as Rav. And Rabbi Elazar was his student. Okay, so clearly less status than Rav. So, Ave Rav Chista Uvda ki Rabbi Elazar. Rav Chista Paskin like Rabbi Elazar. Amrule, Rabban Ukva, Rabban Nechemya b'nei binte de Rav. Rabban Ukva and Rabban Nechemya, the sons of the, it's the grandsons. They're the sons of the daughters of Rav. That's the b'nei binte de Rav. Binte is banot. Le Rav Chista, they say to Rav Chista, the grandsons of Rav, Shavit mar Rav Rave ba'avi kizutre, you left such a great man and you're doing like a smaller man? Amar le, va'ananami ke Rav Rave avde, I also am doing like a great rabbi. Why? Dechiata Ravin, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, echad ze v'echad ze kantav ena balochel perod. It's not just Rabbi Elazar who said this, but I can pass it down in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan already can trump Rav. Okay? So Amar Rava, Hilchita, so now Rava, a few generations later, fourth generation, Paskins, Hamocher Sadel Ishto, Lo Kanta, Vabalochel Perot, Bimatana Kanta, Ve'en Habalochel Perot. Okay, Rava, well, sort of like Rav, but if you notice, he says something strange, which the Gemara is going to question right now. The Gemara says, Tarte? He says two things that are really opposite in the first line. Okay, I don't know if you caught it because it was so similar, but you missed one important word. Hamocher sadel ishto lo kanta. She doesn't acquire the field. Why wouldn't she acquire the field? Because ligluya zuzeh hu debai, right? Remember we said there's a few different issues going on here. Number one, right, when he gives her a deed of sale, does it work at all? And if it does work, then his account is a mechira or a matana, right? So now he says two things that contradict. Because he says she doesn't acquire it. And then he says, Babalochel Perot. Babalochel Perot seems to imply she acquires it, but he has rights to the Perot. So what's this talking about? So what do they answer? Lo kashya. Kam b'ma'ot smunin. Kam b'ma'ot she'ein smunin. The first line of Rava is actually bringing up two cases. Okay? It goes like this. Hamocher sadeh ishto lo kanta. If she bought it with hidden money. If the money that she bought it with was money that she was hiding away, then we can assume that he was just trying to get her hidden money that was really his, in which case she doesn't acquire the field at all. But when he says, v'habalochel perot, that's if she buys it b'ma'ot she'ein tmunin. She buys it with money that he knew she had, that was revealed, that was out there, that, you know, let's say she inherited from her father, and she took the money from her inheritance, and she bought the field, then the baal gets perot, because that's basically, that's nechseh maluk. Okay, da'amar Rav Yehuda, and here's our support. Ma'ot munin lo kanta, ma'ot she'ein munin kanta. If she has hidden money and she uses it to buy from her husband, that doesn't work because then he's just trying to get her hidden money. And if it was einan munin, right, they weren't hidden, then she can acquire. Okay, now, this is a very interesting thing that I want to just end with, which is there's a machloket among the mafarshim about whether there's only a difference between ma'ot munim and ma'ot she'ein munim when it comes to a sale. Or what if a husband says to the woman, I think you have money that you're hiding from me. Can he... one second, I just want to clarify exactly how this works. According to this... Right. If the husband, if he does this sale to try to get at her hidden money, then we're going to assume, according to the conclusion of the Gemara here, that if she's using her hidden money to buy this property, then we can assume that he was just using this as a tactic to get her to give him the money. But what if he says to her, I think you have money that you're hiding from me, that's really yours. And she says, no, I don't. Is she believed or not? In other words, to what extent can we believe her about this kind of property, about hiding things? So just 1 minute, I want to... 1 second. Right, like let's say the husband goes and finds money hidden under her mattress, and he claims, you're hiding this money must be mine, okay? So some of the Rishonim say that case is not believed. Okay, if he finds hidden money in her house, in her, you know, like in her possession, and tries to claim that money's mine, he's not believed. It's only in a case where she bought the property using that money, and he was using it as a way to get the hidden money away from her, then we do it. Other Rishonim say no. In other words, that all this, right, is across the board. Any money, if he grabs her money and says, hey, this was stolen, and he suspects her, then he can be believed. So again, there's this debate about how much we're concerned that a woman's stealing stuff from her husband and, you know, or keeping some of her proceeds that she makes for herself, and how much, you know, how much we worry about her dishonesty, to what extent. Do we just say in a case of a halva'ah, where we say unlikely that the husband is going to make it, you know, borrow money from his wife, or do we say it also in a sale? Or do we go so far as to say, even in a case where he's just suspect of her and he finds money that she's been hiding, can he claim rights to that money without any proof? Which is a very interesting debate. So that case wasn't mentioned at all in the Gemara, and that's why obviously the Rishonim debate, well, is it the same logic in the Gemara, would it apply also to theirs? Okay? So it's a matter of how, to what extent we're concerned for this concern, this issue of the woman stealing.